Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. We have a lovely guest this week. Shelley Roberts is joining us. Shelley is a life alchemist, a transformational energy healer, and success strategist who works with awakened souls who are feeling the call to be, do, and have more out of life. Her life experience of trauma and inner healing uniquely enable her to empower, guide, and foster healing for spiritual individuals on the same recovery journey. Welcome to the show, Shelley.
It is such an amazing opportunity to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here to really talk about this transformational journey that you've had in your life. I know that you personally have had your own journey from trauma to healing. And I was kind of wondering, and I know you help people with that, but I wanted to know, like, what were some of the pivotal moments that really started you off on your journey?
So I've been a lifetime spiritual path, like consciously on the spiritual path. In my college years, it was a lot easier, I got to tell you, because the bump in the road was when I got married to a narcissist. Didn't know it at the time, but that was the beginning of the. Of course, I had core wounds, but getting there and then having to deal with the shift in reality that a narcissist, and he was a severe narcissist, introduces into your experience. And then he inflicted that onto my daughter as well. And so one of the things in that long, long, long journey, I would say it was a bunch of bumps in the road and realizations that occurred and really struggling with knowing that I don't deserve to be treated this way, that I know that this gaslighting is not me and it's not truth, and really fighting that. So because I was in a place, and not everybody fights it, others handle that abuse differently, but I was fighting it. And in that fighting, I ended up with depression and anxiety and PTSD and just all these dysregulations, chronic fatigue syndrome. I mean, it just went on and on and on until I finally hit a place where key turning point was he started to, my daughter was still very young, tried to control her by pulling her hair. And I'm like, oh, I am not having this. And so that was like, okay, this is not, I don't want this for her growing up. This is not okay. I went into the whole mother bear mode at that point, but it wasn't enough at that point to really catalyze getting out of the marriage and starting my own deep inner work to reclaim my authentic self and who I am. And then also who I wanted to be in the world, because I knew that I was hiding. I knew that I was cowering in fear. Didn't have a great relationship with the future. Shoot, I opened up myself to this person and look what I got. If I open up myself again to somebody else or the world in some way, an authentic visibility or other ways, I was like, what is going to be drawn back in? I don't want any part of that. So I was not in a place of trust. And that was maybe 3 years ago when I was on a shamanic training program that came into the foreground that I was not in trust. Like, if you're not in trust, then you're not going to have a great relationship with what you're pulling in from your future, right? You have to trust that the universe is delivering something for you, not you know, to you as a victim. So that's a key realization down the road. But like I said, to your question, there were quite a few aha moments along the way that came in kind of sporadically. The couple of catalyzing ones were I got fired from my job. I'm, you know, literally a star performer in all ways and was in an energy of proving to myself and to the patriarchy that I was hitting the glass ceiling in, right? In the in the 9-to-5. And when I lost that job, I had taken it because I was cajoled into taking a higher paying job than the consulting position that I was in. And this was not an integrity with me. It was based on greed, volumes of sales and that kind of thing. And it was because he was goading me, right? The criticism that a narcissist likes to dish out, and you're not enough and you're not doing enough and, you know, on and on and on. And so when I landed my ass in the hospital, because I was in a stress-induced breakdown, working long hours, stressing out because of the performance metrics and the ambiguity that was difficult to navigate in, just found myself in the hospital in a breakdown state, and he was afraid that I would lose my wedding ring, and so he took it off my finger. And I was lucid enough at the time to realize that, wow, my wedding ring that you purchased was more important to you than my state of being, which was a freaking train wreck in the hospital. And that was a huge catalyzing aha. So between the way that he was treating my daughter and that realization that the material things and the money was more important than me and my state of being. And I was like, okay, I'm out of this when I get back. And literally it took me a year to pave the way to have a graceful exit. But that was, I think, a key catalyzing moment, and basically created the commitment, the decision and the commitment that I wanted more for myself and for my daughter out of this life, and that I didn't deserve the way I was currently being treated. And that was enough for me to say, I'm out. I'm done with this. I need something new and different for both of us, more positive, more life affirming. But it was like 7 or 8 years later, you know, that I came to that realization from the point that we were married, unfortunately, because the damage at that point was done. I had a lot of healing to do after that experience. I mean, it didn't stop there. The lifetime of trauma that I experienced was, again, a theme of narcissistic abuse. I was in a relationship with a family member who we co-owned a family summer cottage, and I ran into financial troubles, and she didn't care because my ex taken me to court on multiple successive occasions, and she was like, I want the money. You need to pay for your part of this cottage, blah blah blah. And I'm like, I provided her solutions and options and other things, and she's like, no, absolutely, again, narcissist. It was all about her and her prestige and everything else. And so it's like, again, I didn't matter in this relationship. I'm like, where is this trend coming from? Oh, my God. Right. And then my daughter in her teenage years started lashing out to me. She was still living with me at the time, and was lashing out with all of the hate and discontent that was still instilled in her from her experience with her father. So I got to experience narcissistic abuse as an authority figure from her in her teenage years. And that relationship is still rocky because of the experience that we have had because of him. So there's been a lot on the journey and a lot to heal from. And my relationship, like I said, to the future was not a very positive one. I was hunkered down in fear. It was hard to get out of a place of seeing the darkness and being anchored in on my experience and in fear of experiencing it again, because I saw there was a trend.
Right.
Over time, you get to a place, hopefully, where you're like, okay, recognize this is happening and I have choices in how I respond to it. But it was still one of those things where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in this nightmare. How do I wake up?
Exactly. And that's kind of my question for you. So if you're seeing like these patterns with different people in your life, like repeat, how did you, like, what led you to like shamanism as a form of healing to help you with overcoming some of, you know, these patterns or beliefs that you had?
I think that the first thing that woke me up to those kinds of tools and techniques was a human design chart. when you anchor into the energetics of how your body is wired, and you recognize and connect to how your body processes emotions and stores them, frankly, you're doomed to repeat them until you release them, because they are stored in your body, literally, in trauma responses that are ingrained in both your neural pathways, but also in your cellular construct. So epigenetics is a thing. When you raise your vibration, it literally shifts your internal body wiring, if you will, your DNA, what's turned on in your genes and what's turned off. And that shifts your entire experience. So if you recognize the connection to what's going on in your mind, what's going on in your emotions, and where you're stuck, you can then consciously take steps to shift your energy, and also that results in shifting your experience. I think when I started practicing those techniques, and it led me, as you noted, into the energy healing, different multiple modalities, shamanism being one of them, that I think was pivotal, because when I discovered that you are truly the co-creator of your own experience, I'm like, oh my God, if I had known that, right? You can shift your entire experience intentionally as soon as you shift your stories and your beliefs around how you feel about money, how you feel about the future, how you feel about the work person that you can't stand, who's under your skin all the time and triggering you in the workplace, right? Yeah. All of that is interrelated. It's such a powerful realization that you are in control of your own self, as soon as you shift out of the reaction mode. So that was incredible for me.
For people who don't know what epigenetics is, can you explain that to us?
I can try. Literally, folks think that they're hardwired in their genetic makeup, and everybody has the same codons in their DNA. So we've all got the same DNA, but it's a question of, and this is where your genes and genetics come in, what's turned on and what's turned off. So what scientists are recognizing, and I'm not a scientist by any stretch, but my understanding of it is what scientists are recognizing is that what they thought were a bunch of junk DNA is actually highly purposeful and provides us with the tuning and the tools to a larger universe. So through us, through our body, and the way that we experience it is based on what genes are turned on and which genes are turned off. So if you have a proclivity in your genetics for blindness or red hair, for example, it shows up in your genes construct. But it also means that if you've got a tendency in your family line to breast cancer, it's also going to show up in your genes construct. Mm-hmm. The amazing thing about all of this is that if you can consciously raise your vibration and tune your body into shifting those genetics, you see things like miracle cures of cancer and releasing of fibromyalgia just from having a spiritual practice. Probably some treatment too, because that gives us a level of assurance, and also some added benefits in a lot of cases. I'm not disparaging our current amazing medical institutions and the science behind it. But the epigenetics, I think, is going to be one of the areas where science is going to explode. Because when we determine what the relationship is between our environment, because it's triggered by our environment, our inner environment and outer environment, which is basically the same thing in my mind, because our outer environment is created by our inner environment. So if you're able to raise the vibration in your inner environment, then you have shifts in your experience, whether they're your embodied experience inside of your body or whether they're the experience that you're having with others outside of yourself. So it's all interrelated.
Would you say that this also, and I don't know if this is in alignment with epigenetics at all, but would you say that, let's say that you've come from a long line of family members who've had a lot of trauma, do you think that any residue from that kind of comes into you as you are born here onto the earth from your lineage, essentially?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We bring all of that, both physically as part of our DNA and our genetics. We bring that into our experience, quite quite deliberately as souls. And we also have the energetics associated with being in the womb and what our mother and then our mother's mother before her were experiencing at the same time. So we get imprinted by the energy around us in a lot of different ways. And your community is highly intuitive, and they're probably a great deal of empaths. They know this. They know this very, very deeply, very, very well. And so, you know, being careful of what you're allowing in, if other people's angst and worry is affecting you, then, you know, there are practices to allow you to be aware of that and then to basically shield yourself from absorbing that energetic environment around you. So very, very intentional ways of handling these things. The key for me in how I recognized that this was definitely on my soul journey was when you're introduced to your human design chart, a lot of times you're also induced to the derivative chart called the Gene Keys chart, which is based on the same modalities. And the Gene Keys chart is literally your energetic pathways that are activated for your genius, for your prosperity, for your heart opening, and for your journey in this lifetime, in this incarnation. And one of the keys, and it basically is mapped to your unique imprint, just like your human design chart is energetically. They're very related. So long story, circular answer, is that when I realized in a Gene's Key reading by a very talented practitioner that my life purpose here was to transmute all of the, like, the sum total of human suffering, I was like, holy Toledo. And his question to me was, what has been your primary predominant lifetime experience? And I'm like, well, that's easy. Low self-worth, zero self-esteem, and narcissistic abuse. And he's like, okay, so the repression of the feminine. I'm like, yes, absolutely. The glass ceiling, bullying, all of it. Mm-hmm. So repression and oppression. And he's like, so when you look back over your family lifetime, has that been the history of the family? And I'm like, haven't done that work, but if I am here to in our new earth paradigm to help with the sum total healing of humanity's, you know, experience of suffering, it's all of those things. It's the betrayal, it's the backstabbing, it's the judgment, it's the repression, and people historically haven't treated each other very well, right?
Right.
So, and then my life work was to put on my energy body and transmute it. So, you know, when Jesus, for example, transcended his body and didn't leave anything behind, that's exactly what that's talking about. But when you're here incarnated, you're living your experience as a soul in this body and in this experience. So if you're able to, again, raise your vibration, you are very directly impacting the way in which you experience the world around you and how you react to it.
So if somebody, you know, wanted to come to you, how would you help them with raising your vibration? Like, what does that entail? What does that look like for you?
The first thing to do is realize where you're at. So I created an assessment. It's super quick. Actually, I can put it out there as a free offering. I'll do that after we're off of here. I'll put it, I've got on my webpage free resources, so I'll add it to there.
Okay.
So literally the first step is to find out where you are right now. One of the parts of my journey is recognizing, okay, you know, there's a lot of teachers out there that say, oh, you have to overcome your limiting beliefs, shift your limiting beliefs. I'm like, well, what the F are they? You know, we're the tree in the forest, and we're looking around and we see the other trees around us. We don't see the limiting beliefs inside of ourselves. They show up as reactive patterns and how we respond to things, right? Mm-hmm. If we're assuming that all the people around us are judging us, then what are we judging in ourselves, right? It, you know, the inner critic becomes the outer judger.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of relationships. It's like, if you don't recognize that you're in them, then, you know, you're not going to know what to target for a shift. So the first thing is to bring it into your conscious awareness and then make a decision and commit to making a shift. So once a person has reached that point, then you work with them to find what resonates with them and what their what they're willing to, like, what they're willing to work with and respond to. Super spiritual people choose one, you know, set of modalities. Others who are just beginning their path resonate with something else. It's all good. There's plenty of tools and techniques out there that can be applied. But it's, you know, the initial trick is to see, okay, where are we at? And then what do you want to commit to? And you do one thing and it has a ripple effect. So that's super powerful about this work as well.
Definitely. And I want to go back to something that you said earlier about learning, you know, that, or learning to create your own story. How did you go about, like, you've been through a lot, right? And I think a lot of people can relate who are listening, especially I'll even say in the workplace, because a workplace is a place of power dynamics and struggles and stressors. Oh, yes. And all of that, right? And we take that home with us, even though we don't think we do, but you know, we take it here with us. How did you help yourself, like, recreate your story? Because I think people do want to have a better experience of this life, but yes, maybe it begins there too.
It absolutely begins there, for sure. When you recognize the stories that you're telling yourself and you are able to shift into, well, wait a minute, what else is true? Well, wait a minute, what else is possible? Well, wait a minute, is this the only thing? This doesn't have to be the only thing. We basically have the tendency as humans to anchor in on this one thing that's in front of us and accepting that as our unrefutable truth, and it's not. Mm-hmm. It's the lens that we're applying in this moment, right? So you shift the lens or crack the lens or get rid of the lens altogether, then, you know, all of a sudden how you understand the situation shifts, and then how you understand and react to emotionally the same situation with a different lens is going to be completely different. I'll give you a quick example. I had a narcissistic supervisor in the workplace who basically identified me as a convenient fall guy for the behavior of somebody who is in a position of like a chief position that I worked for. And so literally everything was my fault. And I was supposed to, you know, I was supposed to be doing all of these things according to her. And I'm like, okay, at what point was I told that those are expectations? So when I went into her office, when she told me she was going to put me on a performance review, and I was like, oh, clearly there's some behavioral things or some things that I need to be paying attention to that I'm not. Let's have a conversation around what your perspective on what those things are. And she basically refused to have that conversation. I'm like, okay. So literally at that point, I was like recognizing that I was being set up as a fall guy for somebody else. And there wasn't a darn thing I was going to be able to do about it because it wasn't about me, right? I was being set up as a fall guy. So I struggled with that. I'm a high performer. I always have been. And so I struggled with that for a good month. And the shift that I realized as soon as I was able to process the emotions around non-performance, I'm like, I am not a non-performer. This is not my identity. It's not, I'm like a success coach. I'm a success strategist. I'm like, this is not me. And as soon as I'm like, I'm not, it's not me. It's not, this isn't who I am. This, oh my gosh, it's going to go on my permanent record. I was all in that swirl, right? Right. So you have to feel your feelings. So the first thing is I felt my feelings and I allowed myself the time to process through all those feelings. And I tend to journal a lot. I find it very cathartic. So I wrote down all of that angst and anger and, yes, I'll say it, victimization. And then I was like, okay, if I were the co-creator of my universe, which I believe I am, and I am responsible for the creation of my reality, and this is the hand that I'm being dealt, some of which was my fault. And I recognized that had I behaved differently with this person, and this person, maybe we wouldn't be here. Yeah. But I doubt it because those persons were going to react the same way no matter what I did, right? And so I'm like, okay, so here are the cards that I've been dealt. And what can I do that is empowering and feels good to me in this situation, recognizing that the point in time that is going to shift is downstream when I can have basically a refute to whatever lies she puts down in my performance review at the end of the performance cycle, which was a year later. So it was a long time to be walking on eggshells, right? At that point, I decided that I was going to stand in my power and I was going to be who I was authentically. I was going to show up with commitment and responsiveness. And basically that's what I had been doing. But the key shift for me was, okay, the person that I'm being a fall guy for is this person over here who I didn't have a relationship with at the time. And so started to create a, you know, showed up in her doorway, started to have casual conversations, nothing impactful, just, to, you know, hey, I see you like Starbucks. I'm heading down there. Would you like something? Little things like that. She wasn't the type of person to open up to others, but she did tell me that, you know, she was all these things that were on her plate and she was staying late and all this stuff. And I was like, well, that's not healthy. I brought her in two crystal palm stones and bought one for me as well. And I was like, okay, here's how you use these. Here's what it is. Here's the energy of the stone. And when you are feeling stressed, I was like, it's this rubbing of the energy of the stone. And I was like, as you're doing it, imagine yourself on the beach, listening to the waves, hearing the birds, literally take yourself out of the current state. I said, and that openness will help you in a more calmer place to deal with all of the things that are currently on your plate and overwhelming you or stressing you out. And she did. And she was like, oh my gosh. Well, she never said anything to me, but that one small thing, that thoughtful gift. And I was like, oh, and I got one for me too. Right? Mm-hmm. So we could be in this together. And literally opened up that door. And her response to this other person shifted. Now, it didn't change anything in the outcome regarding the supervisor that was already had it in her head that I was a non-performer and that she had it out for me. But what it did do is it changed the work environment to be one that was less toxic and caused me to not have to be in a place where I was necessarily constantly walking on eggshells. So when you were able to release the story that I am a victim being persecuted by this person in power that I have no way to influence because she closed the door on me, well, what else is possible? And with who? Because we tend to get focused like a laser on the one person that we're struggling with, right? Yeah. But when you widen the aperture and look more broadly at, okay, well, what else is going on? What else can be true? What else can be true for me? You take control of yourself and you're able to then take control of how you react to what's going on around you. And that is incredibly powerful and empowering. And I recommend highly when you shift that perspective and look more broadly outside of what's being inflicted on you at the moment. And I will admit right now, when I was in trauma and despair, it was not going to happen. But when you're in these, when you're in a much more, you know, stable place or a more normalized place, it is a very powerful and empowering technique to put yourself back into the control of yourself and the experience that you do want to be having, which is the key right there.
Definitely. And how did you overcome self-doubt? Because I imagine even at the beginning, the stories that you've been living with for a very long time are deeply implanted in your very being. And, you know, everybody comes up against self-doubt, whether or not they can actually transform something in their life. Because even when, at least I think that sometimes, you know, when you start trying to change yourself and you still go back to, let's say, family that was toxic or people who are used to treating you a certain way, they have trouble accepting the new you.
Yes, it's so true. It is so true. And it makes it hard as you're trying to make a shift for yourself. Especially when they're people that you care about, but can't stand to be around. It's like, I love you, but you're toxic for me. And so I'm going to make a choice to honor myself and choose how much of you I welcome into my, you know what I mean? That is hard. That is hard. I mean, literally having to let go of friends who were introducing too much drama into my life and were rocking my world. And I was like, I don't need this in my life. I love you. I'm here for you as a friend, but not like this.
Exactly.
And they don't. It's hard for them. You're right.
Definitely. And it sounds like you had to, or part of this kind of transformational journey is learning to set your boundaries where you may have not had any at all.
Right. I had none. You're absolutely right. When you come out of a narcissistic, like a severe narcissistic abuse situation, I was a puddle of a human on the floor. So boundaries was like this aspirational thing I was completely non-existent. I was people pleasing like crazy, in order to avoid all of the you know, all of the criticism and the judgment, I was just like not in a place. And literally I accepted and surrendered to a bunch of things that were going on when my daughter was in her teenage years that were illegal, right? I was like, this is not okay. This is not okay with me. And I was in despair at that point because I didn't feel like I was empowered to, it was like the two bad choices. They're going to do this behavior somewhere. You know, is the better choice to have it here where you can actually monitor it and make sure that people don't hurt themselves, right? So it was awful. It was to be confronted with these double-edged swords, if you will. The self-doubt has been a long, 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 long journey, rebuilding myself up from that puddle of a human on the floor. I think the key thing for me in that was recognizing that I do have value and I always have, and then literally believing that and reinforcing it with self-care and things that honor myself. I never used to buy anything for myself, and I started buying myself little things and you know, appreciating. This is for me. This is only for me. This is because it makes me happy. And starting to pay attention to how do I feel in this situation? I'm not feeling good about this. Well, what's going to make me feel better? And what do I need to do in order to feel better about this? And really, really, really anchoring in and honoring yourself and what makes you feel good in a situation, whether it's a personal dynamic or something else going on. That, I think, is the first key thing, because we're not willing to do that. We don't think of ourselves as women. We don't think of ourselves first, typically. And I think probably a lot of guys too. So literally, if you are in a place where you can accept that you matter and that you do want some things for yourself, and they may not be big things. You know, for me, it was like, okay, what do I need to do in order to have a level of inner peace? And that was my non-negotiable. This doesn't make me feel good. I'm churned up inside about this. What is it that I need to say or do to reclaim my inner peace? So coming up with what is your non-negotiable, and making that truly non-negotiable, and then shift it. What is it that's going to make me feel better about myself in this situation? What is it that I can do to make me more joyful? What's going to, you know, what can I say or do that's going to help me to be feeling more empowered, like I have some control over this. A lot of us tend to give our power away. People pleasing is one way, but there's a bunch of others. Self-doubt comes up as imposter syndrome. Who are we? You know, who am I to do this? So, you know, when you recognize that that has come up and you acknowledge it and you're like, okay, well, wait a minute, there's a reason why this is coming up. What is the reason? It might be a feeling of self-doubt. It might be a feeling of not worth it. Or like you were alluding to, the stories, you know, growing up with, you know, you're a woman and women don't do that. You know, those kinds of things impact us as we stop believing them. But guess what? They're still ingrained in us. Right. So our body still thinks that's true, right?
Yeah.
So all that stuff, we need to let back out to the universe and say, okay, I want a different experience. I need to release this back to you, and let's transmute it into something that's more positive for us. But yeah, this is all part of it. Recognizing that that stuff is under the surface, and then releasing it, acknowledging it, and then claiming, what do I really want? What do I want to do? What do I want? Not what I don't want. Focus on what you do want.
Exactly. And I like this whole idea of reclaiming your inner peace, because I don't think, and I even say this for myself too, that many people sit down to even ask, like, well, what does peaceful living look like for me? Or what is it, you know, what does my inner peace look like? And I feel like part of that is also, like you said, for me, it's like kind of these key words, like your non-negotiables, because as a people pleaser, you know, you may have a problem saying no,
yes,
you know,
yes,
do certain things because you don't want the person to feel bad. And it's more about prioritizing them than yourself.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
And,
right.
And I think that, I like this. I just like this whole concept of kind of creating, like you said, creating your story and identifying your non-negotiables.
Yeah, the story needs to be one that you resonate with, that you firmly believe. For me, it's okay. I'm a co-creator with the universe. This is not the experience that I would create for myself. If not this, then what? Right. So, what is that more empowering story that you would rather be living in as the hero of? And then what are the things that would need to change in order for that to be true? The other part of it is being open to, I'm solely fixating on this negativity surrounding me and the criticism that I'm receiving. What else is true? Well, this person is dishing it out, and I'm recognizing the lies and the falsehoods and all of this. So this person is not anchored in their reality. They're spewing all these lies and judgments and misinterpretations. Well, does that mean that it's true? No. It means that they're projecting their junk onto me, and I recognize it for what it is, but I don't accept it. It's not mine. You can have that back.
Yeah.
My story is one where I'm going to stand in integrity with who I am and what makes me joyful. It's not intending to hurt anybody else. I'm not about trampling on people's feelings, but I will stand in my own integrity. And my own integrity is my inner peace is non-negotiable. So what is that one thing inside of you that you would take a stand for in your own experience of what you do want? Because a lot of us are tolerating things that we don't want, as opposed to shifting what we don't want into what we do.
Exactly. And what would you say to, let's say you're working with somebody and, you know, they're very skeptical that they actually can have some sort of control about like co-creating their reality, because a lot of people do feel they're at the mercy of the world as opposed to having some level of control.
If we're so anchored, that's an amazing question. If we are so anchored in our story as to be firmly believing that we are a victim, then the first thing that needs to shift is the belief that we're a victim, that we have to tolerate and put up with anything that's dished out our way. If we're in that place, then, you know, the first thing is to be willing to accept a different story, and a degree of responsibility for your own self, your own responses, your own reactions. If a person is willing to do that and maybe look at themselves in the mirror a little bit and get in touch with their intuition, which gives you a more profound, authentic truth, then they can move forward on the journey of overcoming all of that and truly shifting the reality. But they absolutely insist that they are a victim and this is happening to them, then that's the first thing that needs to be kicked to the curb.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people, maybe sometimes, you know, we are afraid of, you know, having to be in the driving seat, like be the one who's creating, you know.
Yes.
I think sometimes there's a lot of fear around that level of responsibility.
It is. I see that a lot, and it's a human condition. We are not brought up to have self-confidence in ourselves and our own judgments. We're brought up to be codependent.
Yeah.
Right. So and to rely on like authorities in our church or social environment. So we're not as humans. It's not our culture to be empowered and very, very anchored internally to what our own North Star GPS pillar of integrity is, right?
Right.
So that has been, I think, a key journey for me as well, is recognizing that that is there. I do have it. And it's been cultivated with my connection to the divine through the enhancement of my intuition and my intuitive channeling abilities. I'm at a point now where I have dragons in my experience and trees talk to me. So the divine comes to me, and literally I went on a visualization journey with a friend who was holding space for me. And we went into a garden and literally I had on the ceiling of the garden, Archangel Michael setting up a download, a dish, satellite dish on the ceiling so I could have direct downloads from the divine. And I'm like, okay, when you start to have visualizations like that coming in through your intuition, you know that you're connected to the divine and you have absolutely nothing to worry about. Because you are being taken care of there. Your spirit team's got you.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but it takes a degree of cultivation. Your listeners are highly intuitive. I would say that is the pathway to exploring and bolstering that inner commitment, inner strength. That is a key way to develop that, because when you're connected into the divine truth of who you are authentically and you can recognize that, it becomes much easier to step into who you are. And that becomes a non-negotiable. I couldn't be anybody else than I am at this point, because I'm not going back. I'm not going back to the person I was.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about your energy healing. I am interested in this aspect. So what drew you specifically to that? And what is your modality?
I've done training in a bunch. I think when I took the shamanic energy healing training with a practitioner who's been doing it for years and years, that really amped up my intuitive connection and sensitized me to how I experienced my intuition. I'd had flashes in the past, but I didn't necessarily recognize that was my intuition guiding me, or I didn't know how to interact with it. I accepted it. I listened to it, but it was just a flash. What that practice did, and it was a year-long training, what it did was it created a level of awareness of how my intuition shows up for me. And then also through that practice, working it like a muscle, which I hate that phrase, but you do need to work it in order to increase your level of connection and sensitivity to how things show up. And then also develop the trust, which is key. Yeah. Because a lot of people are like, was that me, or was that an intuitive hit? That whole doubt comes in. And so when you're able to practice, you're able to see consistently how it shows up for you. And then you become more open, and then things start to show up spontaneously when you're open to it. So it's a regular practice, whatever that looks like for you. It doesn't matter. It's just connecting in. That you're doing something with commitment to enhance your intuitive connections. That's super powerful. So I enjoyed that. That's what the role of the shamanic, but the actual energy healing that I have been practicing has been angel Reiki. A lot of people start off with Reiki. The Arcturians are spiritual beings closer to our third dimensional realm. I think they hang out in the fifth or the seventh. So they're closer than a lot of the other spiritual entities, energetically speaking, and they want to help us to elevate our experience here on the earth plane. Same goes for the Pleiades. They're more focused on self-awareness. The Arcturians are about releasing your energetic emotional baggage so that you can then elevate your body and your spirit into a higher frequency experience of life. But all of them, archangels, I had an archangel activation. Mother Mary and Mary Magdalene entered my heart, and that was profound. So activations have been a huge part of my journey. At this point, Lemurian priestesses gifted me their crystal chamber of healing and invited me to use it in their modality. So there's quite a few. Metatron's cube is inside of you, and so activating the Metatron's cube inside of you for your healing, your self-awareness, to bolster you on your journey. There's quite a few things. I've introduced, like, been a hummingbird, experiencing a bunch to see what resonates, and most things did, some things not so much. I like the ones that are very energetically charged. And based in, well, all of them are based in the energy of love. And so what I do in an energy healing session is we focus on the intent of what the client wants to have addressed. Sometimes it's ambiguous and might be have a bunch of elements to it. So we'll do one at a time, focus on one of one of the elements of a complex situation or blockage or whatever, one at a time. And then I just let the divine channel through me on what is the best for this person, what is in the highest and the best for this person. So I don't worry about modalities. I just let what comes through in faith and trust that it's the best for this individual and will resonate the most with this individual. And if the person is in doubt or is having trouble receiving, then we can revisit it after an integration session and revisit it and try it again when they're more ready to accept. And we take it in bite-sized chunks because it's new to some people. And as long as they're open to it, it absolutely, it works whether they're open to it or not. Mm-hmm. But if they're open to it, they will experience the broader spectrum of the results because they're open to it. But the work comes from within them. It's not anything. I'm just channeling it to them so that they can then do what they need to internally themselves. So I'm just an enabler in that respect, a facilitator, if you will, of the divine.
One of the most unexpected or surprising things on this journey for you?
Oh my God, there are so many. there's so many. I think a quick story. I was coming home driving and it was raining. It was a long drive from Atlanta to Virginia. So that can be a good 10 or 11 hours on the road visiting my daughter. And it was raining on the way back. And I was in a high vibe because I enjoy visiting and seeing her. And I look up at the sky and there's this, you know how the dark clouds are in the sky during a rainstorm. And there's this hole of like light coming through a hole in the dark clouds in the sky. The sky is like completely filled with dark clouds because it's raining everywhere, right? And there's this hole of light in the sky. And I'm looking at it in wonder. It's right in front of me on the car and the road. And I'm looking at it in wonder. I'm like, wow, that looks like an egg. And I'm looking at that and I'm like, not only does that look like an egg, it looks like there's a dragon in that egg. I'm like, what? A dragon egg in the sky. I love this. And I was just like, you know, I was just like so excited about the dragon egg in the sky. And so I'm driving down the road. It's still raining. And I feel something off to the side of my eyes catching my peripheral vision attention. And I was like, okay, what is this? And I see a rainbow. The rainbow is off like in the sheet of rain on the side of me. And the light is hitting the drops in such a way that the rainbow, literally you see the fragment of it driving alongside my car. And I'm trying, you know, I'm trying to look forward, but it's off to the side. And so I'm like looking off to the side and I'm like, I think that rainbow is following me. Oh my gosh, that rainbow lands. Is that rainbow landing? Yes. The rainbow landed right on my car. Oh, wow. Have you ever seen the end of the rainbow? I've never had. And I'm like, oh my God, I am the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And I was just like, I was laughing about that one. I loved it. The story continues. 2 weeks later, I was in a dragon, a lady who specifically facilitates dragons. Says dragons are fairly new to me. And she was like, okay, so we're going to meet your dragon and went into a meditation, a guided visualization to meet your dragon. And literally a rainbow dragon comes up to me. And I was like, hey, I know you. You are flying beside my car. Do you know what? It turns out that she was the mother of the air dragon that was birthed out of the egg in the sky. And now I have a rainbow dragon. Her mom is the mom of this air dragon who is this baby dragon who is such a delight. So literally these energetic etheric creatures pop into my intuitive view. It's not always during meditation. They're like pretty randomly.
That's really amazing. It's very sweet. I love that.
I know. I mean, what you pay attention to intuitively in the etheric realm, you will grow. You will absolutely grow. So, you know, be sure that, you know, I'm telling your listeners, be sure to pay attention to things that bring you joy, that just really raise your heart and create that space of inner peace, because your intuition is the gateway to some really, really, really amazing experiences, or that it can be, certainly can be.
Definitely. Shelley, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really enjoyed speaking with you. And if people want to connect, how can they connect to you?
It's been such a joy being here. Thank you. I love talking about this stuff. Probably the best way is my website. It's joyfultransformation.life. There is a course site on there at the login button. I'd love to offer your listeners a 50% off. The code is AWAKENING. So use the code AWAKENING for 50% off. Click on the login button and the course courses available will show up. There's a couple free ones. And there's also several low-cost mini courses to help with things like resistance and self-sabotage. So I invite your listeners to check it out. And then there's also a contact me page, so, and a free resources page. So probably the website is the best way.
Perfect. Everyone, I hope you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did. And thank you, Shelley, again.
It's been such a blessing to be here. Thank you.